listening to Rising Above with Becky Davidson.
We want to be there, as we put it, disability is relentless, so is hope. So we traffic in hope.
Welcome to Rising Above with Becky Davidson, where we hear from special needs families who rise above difficult circumstances and discover that joy can be found in every story. Thank you for joining us. Here's your host, Becky Davidson.
Hey friends, welcome to this week's episode. I am so glad that you are here. Before we jump into this week's episode, though, I want to let you know about a new series that we are starting next week on the podcast called The Unexpected. And I will be joined each week by different friends of mine who have children with disabilities as we explore the unexpected emotions, experiences, challenges, and blessings that come when your child receives a diagnosis. I know you are going to be so encouraged by the stories that you're going to hear in this new series. So be sure to join us starting next week. Now, today I get to introduce you to Jerry and Joan Borton. Jerry and Joan have been married for 28 years, and they are the founders of the Luke 14 Exchange. They are both passionate about encouraging those living with disabilities and encouraging their families. Jerry was born with cerebral palsy, and he uses his life experiences to help others living with disabilities. Joan recently published a book on marriage called Embracing the Richness of a Marriage Affected by Disability, and she loves to encourage other caregivers. So here's the conversation that I had with Jerry and Joan Borton. Hey, Jerry and Joan, welcome to the podcast. I'm so glad to get to meet you all.
It is great to be here.
Yes.
I'm excited to know more about you and what you guys do to love and serve families with disabilities. So tell us just a little bit about yourselves and where you live. Joan, why don't you share with us?
Okay. We currently live in Central Florida. We've been here about 6 years. We've been married for a little over 28 years now, and got married in California, then moved east to the Philadelphia area for many years until God brought us down here to Florida.
Wow. So, Jerry, you were born with cerebral palsy. And so what was that like for you as a child growing up with CP?
You know, for the first several years of my life, I think I thought cerebral palsy was normal. I was fortunate, or blessed, I should say, in that when I was growing up, there were 11 kids in the neighborhood that were about as old as I was. So they just grew up with me, and I did stuff in the neighborhood and, you know, that sort of thing. So I didn't really notice a big difference until I went to high school and most of my friends got their driver's license, but I didn't. So that's probably when things were, that's probably when I could see a bigger difference in my life than theirs.
Yeah. And so when you, like high school age, and you're starting to see, you know, all those things when you're seeing your friends able to go and do, and yet you're not able to do, like driver's license and things like that. So
exactly.
Yeah. And so, you know, how did that impact you? You know, you see your friends going off and doing things that you're not able to do. And so what did that, how did that impact you?
I think there's two issues to that. One is it frustrated me. It saddened me. But at the same time, I was not the kid who stayed home all day. I was a sports writer for the local newspaper. I coached the Little League baseball team. So I was out doing things, but different things than what some of my friends were doing.
Can I interject? Because I think, Jerry, you did things differently than what others did, but those 11 friends you talked about, they carried you up and down the stairs at school.
Oh, that's true.
They carried you onto the bus so you could go on the senior trip with
them. That's exactly right. That is true. So my perception of not being able to do everything was probably not accurate, But that was my perception.
Of course. Wow.
And yeah, they were the ones. We still tell stories about them carrying me up and down steps and down to the locker room and all that stuff that in today's world, nobody would have let us do.
That's are you still friends with them? Do you still keep in contact with them?
Some on Facebook, I'm probably a little more involved with the people that I was in college with.
Yeah. That's amazing, though. I love that you had these guys who were like, nope, you're going to come join us, and we're going to figure out a way to make it happen. So great.
Well, yeah, part of it was they grew up with me in the neighborhood, but this was all before special education and all that stuff. It's like they kind of put me in the pool and I swam, you know?
Yeah. Well, I know that you had to have faced, you know, challenges and things as you were growing up that a lot of people might not understand. But what were some of the things that you faced? And then how did you see God show up in the midst of those challenges?
Great question. I have to take you back to first grade story. My first day of first grade, I went to school. My mom took me to school. The morning was great. My mom came back. I thought to take me home for lunch. And when the lunch period was over, she kind of put me in front of the TV screen. I thought, you know, I'm a first grader. I'm supposed to go to school all day. To which mom said, well, we got to study. You should try half a day first. And if that works, go to a full day. And I said, wouldn't it be better for me to try a full day? And if that didn't work, go back to half a day. Looking back, I can't believe I said that as a first grader. But next thing you know, I'm back in the car, back at school. Mom pushes me in the door first grade and says, he's all yours. And I actually think that was a God thing. Mm-hmm. You know, God saying that, you know, there's a way to overcome this, and I'm going to teach you as a first grader because you're going to use that overcoming skill hundreds of thousands of times in your lifetime, and it starts in first grade.
That's so beautiful.
Figure out a way over the disadvantage. I look back on music and think, wow. I wish I was that kid because there are days when you don't want to overcome. Mm-hmm. You don't want to figure it out, but God will make a way if we'll trust him.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure when you, as an adult, you think about some of those hard things you have to do now, it's a comfort and help to go back to that time when you were in first grade and go, you know what? I was able to do that as a first grader, to stand up and say, no, let's go give this a whole day try. And I think, you know, that just kind of shows how God had instilled that in you early on to be a fighter and to push through.
Yeah. You know, with God's help, I know how to do hard things.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, and that I think is a skill all of us need because we're sometimes people with disabilities, we're so busy looking at how to get around things that we we fall into the, let's find the easiest way to do it. Mm-hmm. And the easiest way is really the best way.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Yeah. So great. Well, Joan, I know just from reading information about you that you are a passionate disability advocate. And so what was the catalyst that made you passionate about wanting to help those with disabilities?
I grew up in a family that loved people and loved sharing God's love. And one of the places my parents found to share Christ was at a state institution in New Jersey with then adults who at that time were considered mentally retarded. We would now say with a cognitive disability or intellectual disability. And, you know, there was hundreds and hundreds of people there. And every Sunday throughout my entire growing up years, I remember my parents getting up early, picking up a couple other volunteers, driving 45 minutes to the facility, teaching men's and women's Sunday school classes to these students, and then coming back home for our church and the day together as a family. And even on the holidays, students from their classes would come back and spend the holidays with us. I got my first proposal when I was about 13 from one of the men that was in my dad's class, and my dad turned that proposal down for me. And it was natural for me to grow up around people with disabilities.
So it's just been part of your DNA from the very beginning and your family culture. And, you know, how great it was for, you know, you grew up and that's all that you knew. And I'm sure that that impacted you in many decisions that you made along the way.
It did. And like Jerry, it was before the days of integration and mm-hmm. where people did things. And so mm-hmm. it was quite unusual that I even went to school with some students who had CP, even though I was in a different state than Jerry, and several other disabilities. So yes, I was blessed to have experiences that were not typical for mm-hmm. the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Joan, I read on your website, in your bio on the website, it says, easy is a word rarely used in relation to disability ministry. But longtime advocate Joan loves to show people how easy it is to start a friendship with someone with a disability. And so what are some of the misconceptions that people often have when they think about befriending someone who may have cerebral palsy or autism or another disability? What are some of the misconceptions that people may have?
Many people think you have to be specially trained. You must have to be a social worker or someone in the medical field to be able to talk to somebody. Another misconception is that if somebody doesn't talk well, we think that they don't have anything of value to say, so we don't invest time with learning to figure out how to communicate with that person mm-hmm. and hear them to do that. I think those are the two probably biggest things, and maybe goes along with that is they're so different from me. But Jerry already mentioned how he coached at Little League, and people would not expect that when they look at him and see him in his chair. Baseball would probably be one of the furthest things from their minds. Mm-hmm. But if we can find a point of connection where we're similar to mm-hmm. somebody else rather than yeah. different, yeah. that will overcome some of those fears.
And so seeing how you're similar, what are some other recommendations that you have when looking at building a friendship with someone who may have a disability?
If you're not sure when you're communicating with them, if you're understanding what they say, it's okay to repeat it and say, I think I heard you say, and echo it back, is that correct? And you may sometimes still not know whether they were saying yes or no. So you can even start with saying, how do you say yes? And the person might blink their eyes or shake their head or put a thumbs up or whatever their signal is. Mm-hmm. So if you learn their yes and no signal, then you can communicate back and find out if you're hearing them mm-hmm. and understanding them properly, because nobody wants to just be led on like, I understood exactly what you said, when it's not even anything close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's so true.
I have an individual that I mentor every other week of meeting together. He has cerebral palsy like I do. And there are times when I will have to take 5 to 10 minutes to really make sure I understand. And he's got to be frustrated by this point. It's taking me 10 minutes, but he will say that I'm one of the very few people who will take the time to make sure I understand mm-hmm. what he's saying.
Yeah. And it's so important because, you know, like you said, I think a lot of times look at, well, like with my son, doesn't communicate with words. But he totally gets and understands what's going on around him. And we have a form of communication for yes and no. And so I love that. You know, that is a great way. Just find out how they communicate basic yes mm-hmm. and no. And then you are able to have a conversation like I am with my son and other people are with my son. And yes. realizing that just because language is limited, that doesn't mean that they are not fully aware of what's going on around them.
Yes. I remember one time in Pennsylvania, we spoke at a church, and after the service, I saw an older teen sitting alone in her wheelchair off on the side of the church, and nobody, as they were all chatting around, was talking to her. So I went over to talk with her, and she was not verbal. And a few minutes in, her parents come over and say, "Oh, she can't talk to you." And it's like, well, but I thought she still might want to spend some time with somebody. Then brought her over into a circle of where some other people were talking, that she could just be part of it. And I remember we got a letter from that elder board after we got home and said, they have been in our church for, I think it was 14 years, and we never had any idea that we should talk with her or include her. Yeah. And so it was just amazing that you can be with somebody a long time and still not really be sure what to do.
Yes, it's so true.
Becoming the father of a child with special needs can feel like you've been drafted into the military and you're starting out as a general. With so many demands, it is difficult to know where to start. We'd like to recommend a book written by the late Jeff Davidson along with his wife Becky that both encourages and challenges special needs dads to embrace their calling and lead their families with hope. You can find the book called Common Man, Extraordinary Call on Amazon or in the Rising Above Ministries store at risingaboveministries.org. Get it today for the special needs dad in your life.
You can be with somebody a long time and still not really be sure what to do.
Yes, it's so true. And sometimes it just takes someone like you being the example and showing how to do it. And with that simple little act, how that impacted, I'm sure, that girl's life going forward.
I hope so.
Yeah. Well, and you guys have been married. How long did you say? 28 years. And so
I always look at her when people ask that question to make sure I get the number right.
make sure you got the year right. That's right.
That's right.
28 years. And so how did you meet? Tell us your love story.
Well, there are two versions.
Okay. As there usually are.
As there usually are. We met at a disability ministry conference in Wisconsin. There were 45 of us there. So Joan remembers me as the guy in polyester who was funny. And I don't remember her at all. The next year in Grand Rapids, Michigan, there were 900 people there. And that's why I remember meeting her.
And so we attended these same disability ministry conferences for about 6 years. And there was a group of us who were all single, and we'd play Uno together or go out for a meal or do something. And after the sixth year of that, Jerry says he went home to Indiana and said to God, "I wish there was somebody like Joan in Indiana." Mm-hmm. And I went home to California not knowing that he had those feelings at all. But we both worked in camping ministry, so the summer was not a good time to connect. And he called me at the end of the summer at home instead of at work for the first time. And I thought, something's different here. And we just continued to grow our friendship through phone calls. And then after the first of the year, we started making trips once a month to see the other person. It was back when email was new, and so you paid per byte for email. And my boss would let me go into work early and use his computer because it was the only one with email, and send emails back and forth. And we paid for every minute of long distance calling. And so we laughingly say we had to get married, but not in the sense that term used to be used, but because we couldn't afford the phone bills, the email, and the air flights back and forth. It was cheaper to be together.
That's right.
I love that. Yeah, the young kids today have no idea how hard we had it back in the day, before the internet and email, how we were, I remember when my late husband and I started dating and you had a calling card. I had a card, like a credit card that I could put them, for long distance calls, and I could put this card in so that we could talk if I were out of town or he was out of town, and before cell phones and all those things. Well, I'm sure that when you all started dating, there were probably maybe people questioning because with the disability issue. And so how did you navigate through that? And, I'm sure there've been challenges that you have faced, but how have you worked through those challenges? I mean, it's been 28 years, so You figured out how to make this work, right?
We look back and reflect on it. We didn't talk a lot about the challenges. I think because I had also been working in the field of disability for many years, we kind of assumed that, and I lived in with a quadriplegic woman and cared for her some, that I knew what it was involved in. I did to some extent, but it's still every person's routine is different and their care needs, et cetera. So there were still a number of things we probably didn't spend as much time talking about as we should have, but we started to figure it out from the first day on the honeymoon as we're trying to do those things. And you know, even though my parents had exposed me and welcomed me to the world of disability, it was a different thing
this
when it became
level.
That their daughter was going to live with this all the time. And so we just had to kind of take things slowly as they came up and talk things through with people when we could and with ourselves.
Joan's friends and family were supportive, but a little apprehensive looking
right.
back. I'm friends with them now, but when my first trip to California, me and your friends felt like more like a job interview.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I laughed with one of our friends, Susan's, who is widowed. It's like, okay, when you get married, I've got my notebook of questions for the guy,
Yep.
Now, my friends, they were just happy that some woman somewhere would put up with me.
Oh, so great. 28 years. So that is impressive. And you recently wrote a book about your experience, a book about marriage. So what was your heart behind wanting to write that book? And what are your hopes? How do you hope this to impact the people who will read it?
I think I was the primary author, but my name's on it, but Jerry had a lot of backstory, of course, with it too. Mm-hmm. But, I had kind of two main purposes. One, early into our marriage, I had said, somebody needs to write a book about leading while sitting, submitting while standing. Now, that's a lousy title for a book. But still, it was the concept that there are a lot of books written by men who had married somebody with a disability, but there is very few from women who had married someone with a disability. And wanting to have a biblical marriage, I wanted Jerry to be the leader in our home, but I'm the practical leader. I'm the first one up. I'm the last one to bed. I take care of the mm-hmm. things that come up. So I felt like somebody needed to share some of those experiences and help other people who might enter that same kind of relationship. And then we're looking for churches in Pennsylvania when we moved there and visited a church where we saw another couple about 10 years older than us, where the guy was in the chair. And so we talked to them right away after church, and we visited a little bit. We went back to that church a couple more weeks, and they invited us to come home for dinner with them one day. So we did. And as we talked with them, so let's see, we were married about 5 years then. They were about 20-some years married right. at that point. They told us we were the first people they'd ever met who lived with disability in their
wow.
marriage.
Mm.
And having been 20-some years and they had nobody else they could talk to about mm-hmm. the situation or seek advice from or just understand that we're not alone in this, that was heartbreaking. Their church loved them dearly, but they didn't understand why when it was snowy, they didn't come to church because
right.
it wasn't safe to transfer her husband mm-hmm. in and out on her own and those sorts of things. And so we never wanted to see another couple live with that kind of isolation. So that was a big factor in writing.
It's like, we don't want this to ever happen again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We want to at least be have a resource that we can cling to them and say, you're not alone. There's stories mm-hmm. in here about us, but other couples where disability mm-hmm. is part of it. And yeah, that was, I remember several times throughout the process, Joan would say, I sort of have more to say. I don't think I can do this. To which I would reply, write the book. We worked together in ministry. So Joan one day said, you keep taking things off my plate and delegating them. Yeah, write the book.
Yeah.
I love you. Write the book.
Write the book. Yeah. Well, I did not marry. My husband was fully able-bodied, when I married him, but became disabled at the end of his life, the last several years. And mm-hmm. I became the caregiver, you know, for my husband in those last few years. And people, it's really hard to grasp what that's like when, and I, so I get what you're saying about you kind of become the leader. You know, mm-hmm. Jeff was most definitely the spiritual leader of a home, even from the wheelchair, you know, but mm-hmm. I'm the one taking care of all the physical things that, you know, mm-hmm. taking the trash can down, you know, taking care of the needs around the home, plus taking care of our son. And so, right. you know, it is a lot of responsibility that unless you've lived this life, you really can't grasp and understand. And so I am sure that the book is going to be a blessing to other couples who have a situation similar to yours. What is the name of the book? And is it out now?
It is out now. It's called Marriage Ability. That's one word, Marriage Ability. And the subtitle is Embracing the Richness of a Marriage Affected by Disability. Because it's certainly not all difficult.
Right.
There's a lot of blessings in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's available both on Amazon or through us. And if I could just say one other thing about the book, there's also a part of it that's written to the non-disabled audience in the church. And we've actually heard more feedback so far from non-disabled people who have read it and said, I had no idea mm-hmm. that's what a family went through. Yeah. And I conclude each chapter with both some questions for the couple with disability to wrestle with, as well as some questions for church members or mm-hmm. for friends to say, have you ever considered coming alongside your friends to minister to them in this way?
Mm-hmm.
So yes, it can be across the board for both those with disabilities and yeah. those who just want to be a better friend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, what are some of the practical suggestions that you make in the book of how people can come alongside?
We share that, you know, sometimes it's the little things that mean the most to us. So somebody who will come over and just fix the screen door so
yes.
it opens and closes properly.
Right.
And because that frustrates the bejeebers out of me. And so it's not that somebody has to be able to come in and do all of Jerry's care. If they can pick up one piece of my day and minister to me, that makes a huge difference. And people think, that's not really important.
Or replace the light bulb.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to do that. So, right. you know, if you come visit, you might be asked to change the light bulb or something like that.
And we tried to help people understand the financial realities of most people with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
People who aren't involved, as we've talked about, often have misconceptions. And one of them is that the government takes care of everything for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And we can all tell them how not true that
right.
is. But they don't understand why, if everybody else is going out after church for dinner, why this couple can't go out to dinner with mm-hmm. them too, because their budget is very tight and they yeah. may not be able to afford mm-hmm. it. So even some practical helps like that, this might be some of the things that your friends are facing. They might not want to talk about mm-hmm. it, but this is for you to be aware, pray through mm-hmm. and see how you might be able to come alongside.
So good. Jerry, I was laughing as you were talking about the light bulbs, because that's my story too. It's like, if somebody comes over, hey, can you help me change this light bulb? And you know, it's
yeah.
just little things like that, that people don't think about. Just little tiny home repairs or
yeah.
you know, helping with the car repair, whatever it is, yeah. things that it's more challenging to take care of. And so mm-hmm. I love that you've included though some helpful tips of ways that others can come alongside and help families, because I think people want to help. I think people want to love and serve our families, but they just really are not quite sure how to
sure.
go about doing that. And so
exactly.
shedding light on that is helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So good. Well, in 2019, you all founded Luke 14 Exchange. So tell us about Luke 14 Exchange and what you do and what that looks like.
Well, we mentor people affected by disability. That's sort of been one of my passions over the years, that I've been down the road that a lot of my mentees are going down. In fact, all but two of the people I mentor have cerebral palsy. So I don't know everything about their story, but I know a lot of their story just because of that. So we do that. We also speak at camps for families with disabilities. We encourage families. We want to be there. As we put it, disability is relentless, so is hope. So we traffic in hope. I have a friend who says that, but I think that's what we do.
Yeah. So we, you know, a lot of times for me, it's taking calls from caregivers or other moms. I just need to tell somebody this. Either somebody won't get it when I say, my kid just commando crawled at age 5 for the first time. Yeah. And everybody else will go, what?
So what? Right. You know, and
so rejoicing with people who have something to share, or even just, I'll tell caregivers, you can call and tell me anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously if there's abuse, I need to deal with that. But I mean, I will just, it's not going to shock me to hear you say that you yelled at your spouse or your husband, or, you know, you didn't want to get them in or out of bed today or whatever else. Like, I can understand the stress. So call me, talk to me about it. Let me pray with you for you. So a lot of our my part of the ministry is as much reaching out in that way as it is Jerry's mentoring.
Yeah. For me, I've got like 2 or 3 people CP who I think have had me on speed dial because they'll call and say, this just happened, what do I do? And I can sort of brainstorm, okay, this is how to deal with that. So
That's so great. And I know that when you have somebody who gets and understands it, that is a game changer. It's a game changer. And Jerry, I gotta tell you, I wrote it down because it's beautiful. Disability is relentless, but so is hope. I mean, that's so beautiful and so true, because this life is relentless and there's always twists and turns and things that happen that are unexpected with anybody in life. But when you live with disabilities, it's just compounded. Mm-hmm. And so, but there's also hope. There's hope in every situation that we face. And so
that's true.
When you look at the future of Luke 14, what are some of the Luke 14 Exchange? What are some of your hopes and dreams?
Wow, that's like in 30 seconds or less.
I'll give you a minute. How's that?
I really want to put together, I've just started the beta testing of a curriculum on mentoring people with disabilities. So I'm hoping that we can develop that into something that we can make available to other ministries. I would love to see the day when we could get 20 to 50 people with disabilities in one room for a weekend and just kind of talk about what does hope in the midst of disability look like? How do we make it happen?
And along with that, we want to be a place where people can see people with disabilities using their gifts, both maybe working with us because we won't be around forever. So we'll need somebody who can take the lead after that. But also we try, most of our blog posts, we're a little slow on them right now, but tend to be about writing about the giftedness of people with disabilities, because we all know about all the things people can't do supposedly. Right. But, you know, we need to hear about, this is what somebody does and is using. One of the guys we wrote about has CP and has a doctorate and works with Sony and other video game industries. Like, you would have never thought of that, but he's helping that industry learn how to interface with people with disabilities. Yeah. So using whatever your gift and talent is and highlighting that part as well.
Mm-hmm. And he's also an example of what the church needs to learn, because I've had conversations with him as, why is it that the people from Sony Studios treat me better than the people in my church?
Wow.
It's like, yeah, we got to fix that.
Why do people in the corporate world, treat you better than the people in your own church? Yeah. And a lot of it, I mean, we all know that people just don't know sometimes. I really don't think people's heart for us is for ill. I just think people just don't know. And and so that's great that you all are there, because you live it every day and can speak into that and show that Yeah, there's value, and everyone has a purpose and a plan. And so
That's right.
Love what you guys are doing. And, you know, I know you all have faced so many challenges and different things in your lifetime and in your life together, but share with us as we close out, what are ways that you rise above your circumstances and find joy in your story? Jerry, why don't you start us off?
By reminding ourselves often that we're on the same team. Because, you know, when you're working in ministry together, I tell people the best thing about working in ministry together is we're together all the time. The worst thing about working together in ministry is we're together all the time. Yes. So sometimes we have to remind ourselves that we're on the same team. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I have to remind myself that I need to close the computer down and spend time with my wife. You know, a lot of stuff is just regular marriage stuff. But, yeah.
I think keeping the spiritual part of our relationship in focus, which we don't always do. We are not angels, trust me. But we make an effort to pray together every day, at least once or more. That from the time we got married, that's been my favorite part of marriage and still is just being able to come together to the throne of God. And it creates better communication between us. Mm-hmm. And then the other side of that, too, is remembering that Jesus said we're going to have trouble in this world.
Right.
So not getting stymied or stumbled, like, why did this happen to me? Well, because it's going to happen. But he didn't just say you're going to have trouble and leave us there. He said, but be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world. Mm-hmm. And every day I may not feel like an overcomer, but if I put my faith in Christ instead of in my circumstances, he will give me the grace, the hope, the strength to be that overcomer. And so remembering that I'm not out of the ordinary when I hit a bump in the road.
Yeah, so true.
I try to be in the Word every day. One of the things I tell my friend every time I get through the book of Revelation.
Revelation.
That's another book.
The book of Revelation, right?
I tell my friend, you know, I just read the end of the book. We still win.
Yeah.
Big.
Yeah. Yeah, it may be hard. We're going to face trials and troubles here. But, you know, and Jerry, do you think about heaven and do you think about being, you know, your body working and you being able to run and do all the things maybe that you weren't able to do here? Is that something you dream about and think about?
Yes, sort of. For the first time ever, I will stand. And a nanosecond after I stand for the first time, I will be on my knees hugging Jesus for as long as he'll let me because he got me there. So the new body, that's cool. But I have an idea what God had to do, what Jesus had to do to save me. Mm. So I'm glad I'm his, and the rest of that is bonus.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, Jerry and Joan, thank you so much for coming on today and sharing part of your story with us. And I know it's going to be an encouragement to our listeners. So it's so nice getting to meet you and hearing more about you all.
Thank you, Becky. Thank you. We really appreciate this time.
Yes.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Rising Above with Becky Davidson, created and produced by Rising Above Ministries. To learn more about us and our resources for special needs families, visit risingaboveministries.org or download our free app. If you've enjoyed listening and want to hear more, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and review. You can always share it to encourage a friend. And remember, joy can be found in every story.